The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, with Chapter 14, The Passive and the Active Brahman, page 404. Certainly, behind all intelligent action, there must be an intelligent will. But it need not be the intelligence or the will of the conscious mind in the actor. In the psychological phenomena of which I have spoken, it is obviously in some of them the will and intelligence of other human beings that uses the organs. In others, it is doubtful whether it is an influence or actuation by other beings or the emergence of a subconscious, subliminal mind, or a mixed combination of both these agencies. But in this yogic status of action by the mere organs, kevaler indriyer, it is the universal intelligence and will of nature itself, working from centers superconscious and subconscious as it acts in the mechanically purposeful energies of plant life or of the inanimate material form. But here, with a living instrument who is the conscious witness of the action and instrumentation. It is a remarkable fact that the speech, writing, and intelligent actions of such a state may convey a perfect force of thought, luminous, faultless, logical, inspired, perfectly adapting means to ends, far beyond what the man himself could have done in his old normal poise of mind and will and capacity. Yet, all the time he himself perceives, but does not conceive the thought that comes to him, observes in its works, but does not appropriate or use the will that acts through him, witnesses, but does not claim as his own the powers which play upon the world through him as through a passive channel. But this phenomenon is not really abnormal or contrary to the general law of things. For do we not see a perfect working of the secret universal will and intelligence in the apparently brute jada, action of material nature? And it is precisely this universal will and intelligence which thus acts through the calm, indifferent, and inwardly silent yogin who offers no obstacle of limited and ignorant personal will and intelligence to its operations. He dwells in the silent self. He allows the active Brahman to work through his natural instruments, accepting impartially, without participation, the formations of its universal force and knowledge. This status of an inner passivity and an outer action independent of each other is a state of entire spiritual freedom. The yogin, as the Gita says, even in acting does no actions. For it is not he, but universal nature, directed by the Lord of Nature, which is at work. He is not bound by his works, nor do they leave any after effects or consequences in his mind, nor cling to or leave any mark on his soul. They vanish and are dissolved by their very execution and leave the immutable self unaffected and the soul unmodified. Na karma lipyate nare, Isha Upanishad, pravaliyante karmani, Gita. Therefore, this would seem to be the poise the uplifted soul ought to take, if it has still to preserve any relations with human action in the world existence. An unalterable silence, tranquility, passivity within, an action without, regulated by the universal will and wisdom which works, as the Gita says, without being involved in, bound by, or ignorantly attached to its works. And certainly this poise of a perfect activity founded upon a perfect inner passivity is that which the yogin has to possess, as we have seen in the Yoga of Works. But here, in this status of self-knowledge at which we have arrived, there is an evident absence of integrality, for there's still a gulf, an unrealized unity, or a cleft of consciousness between the passive and the active Brahman. We have still to possess consciously the active Brahman without losing the possession of the silent self. We have to preserve the inner silence, tranquility, passivity as a foundation. But in place of an aloof indifference to the works of the active Brahman, we have to arrive at an equal and impartial delight in them. In place of a refusal to participate, lest our freedom and peace be lost, we have to arrive at a conscious possession of the active Brahman, whose joy of existence does not abrogate his peace, nor his lordship of all workings impair his calm freedom in the midst of his works. The difficulty is created by the exclusive concentration of the mental being on its plane of pure existence, in which consciousness is at rest in passivity, and delight of existence at rest in peace of existence. It has to embrace also its plane of conscious force of existence, in which consciousness is active as power and will, and delight is active as joy of existence. Here the difficulty of that mind is likely to precipitate itself into the consciousness of force instead of possessing it. The extreme mental state of precipitation into nature is that of the ordinary man who takes his bodily and vital activity and the mind movements dependent on them for his whole real existence, and regards all passivity of the soul as a departure from existence and an approach towards nullity. He lives in the superficies of the active Brahman, and while to the silent soul, exclusively concentrated in the passive self, all activities are mere name and form. To him, they are the only reality. And it is the self that is merely a name. In one, the passive Brahman stands aloof from the active and does not share in its consciousness. In the other, the active Brahman stands aloof from the passive and does not share in its consciousness, nor wholly possess its own. Each is to the other, in these exclusivenesses, an inertia of status, or an inertia of mechanically active non-possession of self, if not altogether, an unreality. But the sadhaka, who has once seen firmly the essence of things and tasted thoroughly the peace of the silent self, is not likely to be content with any state which involves loss of self-knowledge or a sacrifice of the peace of the soul. He will not precipitate himself back into the mere individual movement of mind and life and body with all its ignorance and straining and disturbance. Whatever new status he may acquire will only satisfy him if it is founded upon and includes that which he has already found to be indispensable to real knowledge, self-delight, and self-possession. Still, there is the likelihood of a partial, superficial, and temporary relapse into the old mental movement when he attempts again to ally himself to the activity of the world. To prevent this relapse, or to cure it when it arrives, he has to hold fast to the truth of Satchidananda and extend his realization of the infinite one into the movement of the infinite multiplicity. He has to concentrate on and realize the one Brahman in all things, as conscious force of being as well as pure awareness of conscious being. The self as the all, not only in the unique essence of things, but in the manifold form of things. Not only as containing all in a transcendent consciousness, but as becoming all by a constituting consciousness. This is the next step towards his true possession of existence. In proportion as this realization is accomplished, the status of consciousness as well as the mental view proper to it will change. Instead of an immutable self containing name and form, containing without sharing in them the mutations of nature, there will be the consciousness of the self immutable in essence, unalterable in its fundamental poise, but constituting and becoming in its experience all these existences, which the mind distinguishes as name and form. All formations of mind and body will be not merely figures reflected in the Purusha, but real forms of which Brahman, self, conscious being, is the substance and, as it were, the material of their formation. The name attaching to the form will be not a mere conception of the mind answering to no real existence bearing the name, but there will be behind it a true power of conscious being, a true self-experience of the Brahman answering to something that it contained potential, but unmanifest in its silence. And yet, in all its mutations, it will be realized as one, free and above them. The realization of a soul reality suffering the imposition of names and forms will give place to that of eternal being, throwing itself out into infinite becoming. All existences will be to the consciousness of the yogin soul forms, and not merely idea forms of the self, of himself, one with him, contained in his universal existence. All the soul life, mental, vital, bodily existence of all that exists will be to him one indivisible movement and activity of the being who is the same forever. The self will be realized as the all in its double aspect of immutable status and mutable activity, and it is this that will be seen as the comprehensive truth of our existence. End of chapter 14, The Passive and the Active Brahman.